So we start on the book of Deuteronomy, chapter 1, verse 1. There are some things to say about the book of Deuteronomy before we begin. The book of Deuteronomy is Moses' last address to the people of Israel. It finishes with an account, an appendix of Moses' death. There are actually three addresses, and the book is divided into those. There's a heading that lasts four or five verses. Then the first address is from chapter 1, verse 6 to chapter 4, verse 40. The second address is chapters 5 through 26. So that's the main part. The third address is chapters 27 to 30. Then there is Moses' song and the finish of the book. Things to look for in the book of Deuteronomy. Moses will be, he will be going over a number of the things that God told them. But as he does, he passes over certain things and doesn't mention them. Other things he concentrates on. The principle on that is, well, he omits a lot of what's related to the priests and Levites and includes the things that concern the people in general. And again, it is a, the addresses of Moses are intended to stir up their piety and fear and, proper fear and urge them to follow the Lord. So there is a purpose that defines the selection of materials. One other thing before we begin on this, and this is, we got somebody else coming in. That would be Deb. I'm gonna pause here for just a second. And Lois, it looks like.
Lois. Oh my goodness.
Oh. Yeah, you know it's me. I'm sorry. Can't be on time. Save my soul.
So, after the outline of the book and the purpose of the book to stir up their religious attitude to follow God, one of the things that I was looking for and started to find as I got into studying it in some detail is those things that are not mentioned in the previous three books from Exodus through Numbers. Because Moses has been talking to God for how many years? And I was looking to see if there were things that were just not gone over in other places where something said in Deuteronomy would be a tip off of a conversation or things that were said between Moses and God that were of a more personal relationship, Moses being in on some of what God was doing and saying and thinking, et cetera, et cetera. I'll give you an illustration on that. When we get to the Deuteronomy.
It's just her big computer, so okay. Lois can see.
When we get to the reciting of the Ten Commandments in Deuteronomy, the third commandment is different in the extended reasons, where in Exodus it points back to the creation and the seventh day. in Deuteronomy, it points to you were slaves in Egypt and I brought you out. Why is that difference there? Is Moses putting something in place that wasn't put in place by God? And of course, we'd answer no. But then why the difference? Illustration. There are times when I'm working on a sermon and I get to a certain point in the sermon and I say, well, I can go with this illustration or with that illustration, and I'm not sure which one. And sometimes I'll talk it over with my wife. Hi. I will make a choice, but come Sunday morning, she is listening to it and she knows the other option. Nobody else does. Are there certain things where Moses was aware of another option that God didn't use as the first thing to present to the people of Israel, but it's there in the background? Or are there other back and forth things that we are not tipped off on elsewhere? And when we run into those, it's a good idea to flag those, because what they're pointing to is something more intimate and close in the relationship between Moses and God. And that's of some significant interest. We get a glimpse, almost like we're listening in on the conversation that we didn't get to hear at first. So, and there is one of those that's somewhat significant already in the first chapter. The first few chapters are very much a recitation of things that have happened and things that have taken place. And with that, it becomes time to begin. So verse one, these are the words that Moses spoke to all Israel beyond the Jordan in the wilderness, in the Arabah, opposite Suf, between Paran and Tophel, Laban, Hazaroth, and Dizahab. The Arabah has a wider and narrower reference. The wider is the whole area out there. It's all desert or wilderness. The more narrow reference is the low valley portion of the, let's see, they call it the Great Rift Valley in our time. And the Great Rift Valley extends quite far south. Does anybody know where the Great Rift Valley ends up? no, don't bother. It actually goes far south into Africa and extends all the way to Lake Victoria. That's two-thirds of the way south, three-quarters of the way south in Africa. And there's this huge rift. There's a continental rift that goes through the Holy Land. Jordan River, Dead Sea, on south it goes. So there are disputes as to where most of those towns named actually are. Delitzsch, of course, goes into page after page after page of that. Is anybody interested in digging into exactly where those towns are and what the speculation is? I don't hear anybody saying that. So verse two.
It takes 11 days to go from Horeb to Kadesh Barnea by the Mount Seir road.
Okay.
Seir.
That's significant because that is from the mountain of God. Horeb is also called Sinai. and it's an 11-day journey to Kadesh Barnea. And what did they do at Kadesh Barnea? They sent 12
spies.
What didn't they do?
10 were bad and 2 were good.
What didn't they do? They refused to go into the Holy Land. What did God do? That whole generation would die. What did they then do? Decided to go in, contrary to God's command. But 11 days, that's it? Verse 3, in the 40th year, on the first day of the 11th month, so that's 1 month short, Moses spoke to the people of Israel according to all that the Lord had given him in commandment to them. Okay, that's the setting as to time and the scope of the book. Verse 4.
After he had defeated Sihon, the king of the Amorites, who lived in Heshbon, and Og, the king of the Bashan, who lived in Ashtaroth, and in Edrei.
Edrei was a second capital, apparently. That's a note from Delitzsch. Beyond the Jordan, in the land of Moab, Moses undertook to explain this law, saying, and that's your introduction to the book. 5 verses.
Esther, is Moses just speaking to the leaders? How could he speak to all the Israelites? I mean, there were thousands and thousands of them. How would they understand and hear him? And
better than a million. And some people have a voice that carries. And if you put them in a place where there's a natural rock formation that can project their voice, you can have a lot of people gathered to hear. I don't think that Moses would have said, this is restricted only to the chiefs of the tribes. They would have a front seat, so to speak, but everybody else gathered in.
Okay.
And as a matter of fact, back at Sinai, there are certain spots in the area of the mountain that do form a natural auditorium. So, verse 6, this is our first thing that we didn't hear earlier, and it gives a different feel to some of the things that are said. So verse 6.
The Lord our God said to us in Horeb, you have stayed long enough at this mountain.
Okay. And that's where, you know, God is calling an end to the year and a half of being there. Or the year and a couple months of being there. Long enough here. And he knows when it's time for them to move on. He has said all that he's going to say to them at his mountain. And now it's time to go. Head into and settle in the promised land. So verse 7. Turn and take your journey and go to the hill country of the Amorites and to all their neighbors in the Arabah, in the hill country and in the lowland and in the Negev and by the sea coast, the land of the Canaanites and Lebanon, as far as the great river, the river Euphrates. That's a big scope, isn't it? Verse 8.
See, I have set the land before you. Go in and take possession of the land that the Lord swore to your fathers, to Abraham, to Isaac, and to Jacob, to give to them and to their offspring after them.
Okay. And this calls them back to the promise to Abraham, which means also included in the promise to Abraham is the promise that all nations on earth would be blessed through Abraham's seed. There is the spiritual aspect to this, as well as they take possession of the land. Now, Moses continues on. At that time, I said to you, I am not able to bear you by myself. Now, the reference to this is when Moses was burdened with all of the judicial things, and his father-in-law Jethro, the Midianite, and through Jethro, God pointed Moses to the idea of setting up layers of judicial authority. And I am not able to bear you by myself is something that we didn't hear Moses say it quite that way back then. Yeah. But so these are additional nuances and things that would have been said, but back then in the interest of continuing the narrative, just the basics got pointed out. And it was Jethro that said to Moses, you can't do this by yourself. And apparently Moses said it to the people. And continuing on with the quote, verse 10.
The Lord your God has multiplied you, and behold, you are today as numerous as the stars of heaven.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So that is, again, a harking back to the promise to Abraham. And it's something that Moses said, complimenting them back then. Oh, by the way, that was before they got to Sinai. So Moses is not observing a strict chronological outline of this, but at that time means at that general time. And then verse 11, may the Lord, the God of your fathers, make you 1,000 times as many as you are and bless you as he has promised you. And, you know, has God multiplied his people to 1,000 times 1.5 million? Yeah. Okay. Verse 12.
But how can I bear your problems and your burdens and your disputes all by myself?
Mm-hmm. Verse 13. Choose for your tribes wise, understanding, and experienced men, and I will appoint them as your heads. And so that's a little more detail as to how that actually took place. The people had their input. Moses didn't presume that he would know exactly who to appoint. So it is much different than a top-down arrangement. Verse 14.
You answered me, what you propose to do is good.
Mm-hmm. Again, more details. So I took the heads of your tribes, wise and experienced men, and set them as heads over you, commanders of thousands, commanders of hundreds, commanders of fifties, commanders of tens, and officers throughout your tribes.
That would indicate he's talking to everybody.
Oh, yeah. Verse 16.
And I charged your judges at that time, here are the cases between your brothers, and judge righteously between a man and his brother or the alien who is with him.
Okay. So that indicates already at that time that there were non-Israelites traveling with them, and they expected to have non-Israelites coming in to live among them and be a part of their nation. That was always the plan. After all, God had said to Abraham, "In you all the nations and all the families of the earth." Verse 17, "You shall not be partial in judgment. You shall hear the small and the great alike. You shall not be intimidated by anyone, for the judgment is God's, and the case that is too hard for you, you shall bring to me, and I will hear it." Brief note on this. The Hebrew at that point, there's an interesting idiom. You shall not look at the face. And so the judge is not to look at the face, which is an idiom for the judge is not to be partial or show favoritism by who the person is, but judge according to the truth and according to God's law and God's commands.
So it's not the kind of looking at the face that I used to do, which one of you is lying. Looking at the...
Which, if you look at the face, then you're setting yourself up for the personal flaw of having a favorite. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And...
No, I look at your eyes and could usually tell.
Mm-hmm. The shifty-eyed child.
Micro expressions.
Okay. That also, just last night when we were reading through the New Testament, so they came to Jesus and they said, we know that you are no respecter of persons. The idiom there carried over into the Greek. You do not look at anyone's face. Okay. Is it right to give taxes to Caesar? So.
Is that kind of like judging a book by its cover?
I don't know. Verse 18.
"And I commanded you at that time all the things that you should do."
Mm-hmm. So. Verse 19. "Then we set out from Horeb and went through all that great and terrifying wilderness that you saw on the way to the hill country of the Amorites, as the Lord our God commanded us, and we came to Kadesh Barnea." It's a terrible desert on the way. And there were 600,000 families. Male heads of families, 600,000 of them. And that's a huge number. And verse 20.
"Then I said to you, you have reached the hill country of the Amorites, which the Lord our God is giving us."
Okay. He's going to go into some detail here. "See, the Lord your God has set the land before you. Go up, take possession as the Lord, the God of your fathers, has told you. Do not fear or be dismayed." Okay. So with that encouragement, there they were at the gates of the Holy Land. And then somebody read... Verse 22.
"And all of you came near me and said, let us send men before us that they may explore the land for us and bring us word again of the way by which we must go up and into the cities we in go up and the cities into which we shall come.
Okay. So is there hesitation? But the proposal to send spies in, well, on the surface, that would be a good thing. Make plans, scope it out, come back, get us ready to go in. But that's not how they were reacting to it. The thing seemed good to me, and I took 12 men from you, one man from each tribe. Now, what he doesn't say here is that Moses talked to God about it, and God said what they propose is good. So do it. He is leaving God out of this decision because it came from the people, and it was him that approved it first. And then he went to God kind of to ask him. And God allowed it. It's tolerating their proposal to do an extra step of precaution. Okay. Verse 24.
And they turned and went up into the hill country and came to the valley of Eshkol and spied it out. Mm-hmm.
And they took in their hands some of the fruit of the land and brought it down to us and brought us word again and said, it is a good land that the Lord our God is giving us. That would be Joshua and Caleb giving the positive impression. Verse 2.
Yet you would not go up, but he rebelled against the command of the Lord your God.
Oh. Okay, we knew that. Now, let's get a little bit more detail. Apparently, it was even more impolite than what we read back in Book of Numbers. And you murmured in your tents and said, because the Lord hated us, he has brought us out of the land of Egypt to give us into the hand of the Amorites to destroy us.
You just want to flick them.
Well, this is especially egregious because they are murmuring about the Passover, the Red Sea, the Exodus, the miracles of God. And that is one of the greatest demonstrations of the love of God for them. And they're taking precisely what is God's greatest act of love and attributing it to because the Lord hated us. And at that point, you kind of understand, oh, 40 years. Yep. That deserved it. Verse 28.
Where are we going up? Our brothers have made our hearts melt, saying, the people are greater and taller than we. The cities are great and fortified up to heaven. And besides, we have seen the sons of the Anakim there.
Okay. Which sons of the Anakim would be men of gigantic stature. And whoever it was could be called sons of the Anakim because it's legendary. You don't have to have direct descent from Anak to be called that. Then I said to you, do not be in dread or afraid of them. Verse 30.
The Lord your God who goes before you will himself fight for you, just as he did for you in Egypt before your eyes.
Yeah. They mentioned Egypt. Moses is responding with Egypt. And how did God fight for the Israelites back in Egypt?
Plagues.
Yeah. And then after the plagues?
The Red Sea.
Yeah. And in the wilderness, where you have seen how the Lord your God carried you as a man carries his son, all the way that you went until you came to this place. The tender love of God. A man helps his son along. In helping his son along, he helps to strengthen his son. And God was strengthening them through his words and promises, through miracles and demonstrations of his power, so that the people would be able to stand and boldly trust God. But they would not. Verse 32.
In spite of this, you did not trust in the Lord your God.
That's an interesting translation. The ESV has, yet in spite of this word, you did not believe the Lord your God, which is a simpler, more step one translation. Which means I have to ask the confirmation question that I ask the kids. When it says Abraham believed God and it was credited to him for righteousness, did Abraham believe God or believe in God? What's
the difference?
What is the difference between believing God and believing in God?
Trust.
Believing in God means you believe that he's there. Mm-hmm. But believing God means you trust his words and promises.
Well, you believe
you take them
you believe
as truth.
The word that he has spoken.
Right.
And Abraham believed God when God said, I'll make you into a great nation and as many as the stars in the sky. And in your seed, all nations will be blessed. And Abraham believed that. Believing God means that you are anchoring it to a specific word. Believing in God means a more general trust that he is there and rewards those who seek him. That's a phrase from the New Testament. Now, Moses has shifted this so that he's talking about believing the Lord and anchoring it to God said he would give you this land. Why did you not believe that? And then verse 33 continues that the Lord your God, who went before you in the way to seek you out a place to pitch your tents in fire by night and in cloud by day to show you by what way you should go. And that's the pillar of cloud, pillar of fire that led them through the wilderness, selecting places for camping. So, moving on, verse 34.
And the Lord heard your words and was angered, and he swore.
Yeah. God heard you murmuring in your tents. You thought you could murmur and not be heard. Not one of these men of this evil generation shall see the good land that I swore to give to your fathers. And then two exceptions are coming along. Verse 36 is one.
except Caleb, the son of Jephunneh, he shall see it, and to him and to his children I will give the land on which he has trodden, because he has wholly followed the Lord.
Interesting. The land on which he has trodden. Where did Caleb tread on the land? He was one of the 12 spies. So it turns out that Caleb and his family end up settling south in the general territory of Judah, in the area of where the spies went. Okay. Even with me, the Lord was angry on your account and said, you also shall not go in there. And that refers to later on with the striking of the rock instead of speaking to it. But the reason why he's mentioning this is because there will have to be somebody else to lead them in. Verse 38.
But your assistant Joshua, son of Nun, will enter it. Encourage him, because he will lead Israel to inherit it.
Mm-hmm. And as for your little ones, who you said would become a prey, and your children who today have no knowledge of good or evil, they shall go in there. And to them I will give it, and they shall possess it. Why would Moses say, your children who today have no knowledge of good or evil? I thought it was the one generation had to be purged. Well, what's the spiritual condition of the next generation?
They will believe God. They will enter the land.
Mm.
No? Maybe I'm reading it wrong.
Moses sees the sin of the fathers under the surface in the next generation, which is why he says, who know, who have no knowledge of good or evil.
And my version says, who do not yet know.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I took it like it said they would be captive, but instead, and I'm putting the word, but instead, they will know good from bad. That's how I read it. Right. Maybe I'm.
They were too young.
But they were too young, but they will know, because God will take and teach them. But what you're saying is that they'll enter on shaky ground. Is that because they won't know good from evil?
Well, when God pronounced the curse, those children, that was 40 years ago, approximately.
Right.
So the youngest of them is nearing 40 years old. And they've spent their entire life going through the wilderness, except for those who were children when they came out of Egypt. But they are on the one hand innocent, inexperienced. On the other hand, will they turn away from the Lord?
Well, isn't it possible that they haven't even been conceived yet? Instead of thinking of them as all born?
Well, but your children who you said would be a prey, back at Kadesh Barnea.
Oh.
The reference is to the man 20 years older talking about their children being a prey. And so they've come along. They've grown up in the wilderness. Will they truly follow the Lord? What do you expect?
Well, no. Off and on, they keep turning away.
Right.
Has it ever been any other way than that.
No.
And Moses is at this point about 120 years old, and he's seen it. He has watched the stubbornness of unbelief and the stubborn turning back to sin over and over and over again. And he fell short in faith himself. So this is a reality check, just in those few words. But then, as the verse goes on, they will receive the grace of God in many ways.
But we all do that. You know, we all don't listen, and then we ask forgiveness, and then we don't listen again, and then it's just a flaw of the human character.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So verse 40, back to the people at Kadesh Barnea.
But as for you, turn and journey into the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea.
Which Red Sea is not only the Gulf of Suez, it's also the Gulf of Aqaba. Both sides of the Sinai Peninsula is Red Sea. So turn back does not necessarily mean head back toward the direction of Egypt. It means go south. Then you answered me. We have sinned against the Lord. We ourselves will go up and fight just as the Lord our God commanded us. And every one of you fastened on his weapons of war and thought it easy to go up into the hill country. And this is interesting, verse 42.
But the Lord said to me, tell them, do not go up and fight, because I will not be with you. You will be defeated by your enemies.
Okay. So God has pronounced a curse on them, but now he is going to warn them against doing something stupid.
Because they were going to go ahead and say, well, we should go in.
Yeah.
And he's
on our own.
Yeah, and he's telling them, no, I told you to go turn around.
Yeah.
You're not going in.
Is he still caring for and watching over them?
Oh, sure.
Yeah. And this is the constant pattern. They rebel against God. They walk off on him. He follows after and says, no, don't do that. That's going to hurt.
Do it anyway.
Mm-hmm. You're going to get yourself hurt.
It's like, you know, your kid doesn't do his chore, and so you ground him. Okay, I'm going to do my chore now, Mom. No, you're grounded. That time has passed. Just nope. But, mm-hmm. You know, but he's protecting them even though they were cursed.
We had one where we used to say, we should tell him to go play in the street.
Yeah. As punishment, you mean?
No, because they do the opposite that you tell them. Everything you tell them. I've had a couple like that.
Yeah, I still do.
You tell him not to play in the street. Guess where he's at?
To tell him not to call you, Lois. You
could tell him to play in the street, then he'd be safe. Yeah. Okay. So I spoke to you and you would not listen, but you rebelled against the command of the Lord and presumptuously went up into the hill country. 44.
Still the Amorites, the Amorites who lived in those hills came out against you. They chased you like a swarm of bees and beat you down from Seir all the way to Horma.
Mm. And you returned and wept before the Lord, but the Lord did not listen to your voice or give ear to you. Because that was it. You won't go in. I've declared that you will. I'm turning this bus around.
That's true. The more you parent, the better you understand God.
Verse 46.
And so you stayed in Kadesh many days and all the time you spent there.
Which does not tell how many days or weeks or months or whatever. There are some who have said, well, that means that they stayed in Kadesh for almost the whole rest of the 38 and a half years or however many it was. No, it's just then you stayed in Kadesh, however many days you stayed in Kadesh. It reminds them of the time that they spent there not being able to go into the land. A time of regret. Chapter 2. Then we turned and journeyed into the wilderness in the direction of the Red Sea, as the Lord told me, and for many days we traveled around Mount Seir. Just in the region, here and there. Verse 2.
Then the Lord said to me.
Passes that quickly through the years of wandering, huh? Verse 3, you have been traveling around this mountain country long enough, turn northward. This is the end of the time of wandering. Verse 4.
And command the people, you are about to pass through the territory of your brothers, the people of Esau, who lived in Seir, and they shall be afraid of you, so be very careful.
Tread lightly. Do not contend with them, for I will not give you any of their land. No, not so much as for the sole of the foot to tread on, because I have given Mount Seir to Esau as a possession, which... you know, there's Jacob and Esau, and Esau, God watched over him and drove out the people who lived there in that territory before the people of Esau or Edom, and made a place for them to dwell in. So even as God rejected Esau from being the line of the covenant of the Messiah, was to come. He still watched over Esau and his descendants, which puts a moderating consideration on the line, Jacob I loved, but Esau I hated. Remember that the next time you read that in the book of Romans. It does not mean cast off forever. Okay. Verse 6.
You shall purchase food from them with money that you may eat, and you shall also buy water from them with money that you may drink.
For the Lord your God has blessed you in all the work of your hands. He knows you're going through this great wilderness. These 40 years the Lord your God has been with you. You have lacked nothing. So... it's not only the flocks and herds, it's also the carpenters, the blacksmiths, the whatever that was done. He blessed the work of their hands. And how that happens in the middle of the wilderness is quite remarkable. Verse 8.
But we went on away from our brothers, the people of Esau, who lived in Seir, away from the Arabah road, from Elath and Ezion Geber. And we turned and went in the direction of the wilderness of Moab.
The Lord said to me, do not harass Moab or contend with them in battle, for I will not give you any of their land for a possession, because I have given are to the people of Lot for a possession. And again, there were people that were driven out. So verse 10.
The Emites used to live there, a people strong and numerous, and as tall as the Anakites.
Okay, so these are the names, the Emites or the people of Emim, are the names that the people of Moab gave to them, and they were driven out. Verse 11, like the Anakim, they are also counted as Rephaim, but the Moabites called them Emim. Okay. Verse 12.
The Horites also lived in Seir formerly, but the people of Esau dispossessed them and destroyed them before them and settled in their land, as Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave to them.
Okay. As Israel did to the land of their possession, which the Lord gave to them, does this indicate that this is a later footnote dropped in to give some further explanation? Could be. Is that marked as something that could have been added in as a later explanation? Yeah. Does this mean that the book of Deuteronomy is not written by Moses? No, it doesn't. These things are fair use things when there's a later explanation that is a good explanation. And it is in parentheses in our in my translation. Verse 13, back to Moses talking. Now rise up and go over the brook Zered. So we went over the brook Zered. Verse 14.
And the time from our leaving Kadesh Barnea until we crossed the brook Zered was 38 years. Until the entire generation, that is the men of war, had perished from the camp, as the Lord had sworn to them.
Mm-hmm. For indeed, the hand of the Lord was against them to destroy them from the camp until they had perished. Verse 16.
So as soon as all the men of war had perished and were dead from among the people,
the Lord said to me, Verse 18.
Today you are to cross the border of Moab at Ar.
All right. So, no, this is not Talk Like a Pirate Day. Ar.
Ar. That was Arg. Ar.
Yeah, I was going to say that had a GH in it.
And when you approach the territory of the people of Ammon, do not harass them or contend with them, for I will not give you any of the land of the people of Ammon as a possession, because I have given it to the sons of Lot for a possession. Okay. So the Moabites and the Ammonites, children, descendants of Lot. Verse 20.
It too was considered a land of the Rephaites who used to live there, but the Ammonites called them Zamzumites.
Yeah.
Wow.
Okay.
What's a Zamzumite?
Their name for the people that lived there.
I mean, was it like a derogative name they made up? We don't know.
No idea whatsoever.
The study Bible says murmurers.
Yeah.
Oh.
Well, barbarians. The Greeks used the word barbarians because the language of the barbarians sounded to the Greeks like bar, 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 bar. Ah. people great and many and tall as the Anakim, but the Lord destroyed them before the Ammonites, and they dispossessed them and settled in their place. Verse 22.
As he did for the people of Esau who lived in Seir, when he destroyed the Horites before them and they dispossessed them and settled in their place even to this day.
As for the Avim who lived in the villages as far as Gaza, the Kaphtorim who came from Kaphtor destroyed them and settled in their place. And I'm going with this as a later edition note to help people understand the background of the nations. But
I my footnote says Kaphtor is Crete.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And it is in parentheses too in my version.
But yeah, Gaza's disputed territory looks like the Israelites have held it for a long time.
Well, verse 24.
Rise up, set out on your journey, and go over the valley of Arnon. Behold, I have given into your hand Zihon the Amorite, king of Heshbon, and his land. Begin to take possession and contend with him in battle.
Okay. So the Amorites are not the Ammonites, and they are not kin, and God is telling them, go up against them. This day I will begin to put the dread and fear of you on the peoples who are under the whole heaven, who shall hear the report of you and shall tremble and be in anguish because of you. So as many who heard of God's leading his people in that way, those are the ones that would have dread placed on them. So, meanwhile, Moses is going to ask for peaceful transit through. That's the polite thing to do, isn't it? Verse 26.
From the desert of Kedemoth, I sent messengers to Sihon, king of Heshbon, offering peace and saying,
let me pass through your land. I will go only by the road. I will turn aside neither to the right nor to the left. Verse 28.
You shall sell me food for money that I may eat, and give me water for money that I may drink. Only let me pass through on foot.
As the sons of Esau who live in Seir and the Moabites who live in Ar did for me, until I go over the Jordan into the land that the Lord our God is giving to us. And apparently Moses would have sent those messages early on before the king of Edom and Moab denied him safe travel through their land. But again, we're not doing a chronological telling of it, but a thematic. Verse 30.
But Sihon, king of Heshbon, refused to let us pass through. For the Lord your God had made his spirit stubborn and his heart obstinate, in order to give him into your hands, as he has now done.
Okay. And the Lord said to me, behold, I have begun to give Sihon and his land over to you. Begin to take possession that you may occupy his land. And this begins to be the fulfillment of the promise of the Holy Land. Verse 32.
And Sihon came out against us, he and all his people, to battle at Jahaz.
Mm-hmm. And the Lord our God gave him over to us, and we defeated him and his sons and all his people, and we captured all his cities at that time and devoted to destruction every city, men, women, and children. We left no survivors. Verse 35.
Only the livestock we took as spoils for ourselves, with the plunder of the cities that we captured.
Mm-hmm. Did I skip a verse?
No,
you read two.
Okay. From Aroer, which is on the edge of the valley of the Arnon, and from the city that is in the valley as far as Gilead, there was not a city too high for us. The Lord our God gave all into our hands. Okay. Verse 37.
But in accordance with the command of the Lord our God, you did not encroach on any of the land of the Ammonites, neither the land along the course of the Jabbok, nor that around the towns and the hills.
Mm-hmm. Oh. That completes the first two chapters and is the historic retelling. That will go on through chapter 3, and then we get to chapter 4, we get into more of the exhortation part of this. That's for next week.